Hey guys, welcome back to the Honest Hour podcast. I am so excited to share with you this episode today. Today, I interview Dr. Jenny Rose. Dr. Jenny Rose is a clinical psychologist, a parent-child expert, and a mom to three young girls. Having worked in the field of clinical psychology for over 12 years, she is now a specialist in the field of parenting. Further, Dr. Rose lectures at two local universities in Cape Town. Dr. Rose believes in conscious parenting and is on a mission to make information accessible and digestible by all parents by providing resources, tools, and strategies for everyday living. She believes that raising our kids to be secure, resilient, and confident is the ultimate goal. In today's chat, we discussed all the things about conscious parenting. This is a new buzzword, guys, and I had never heard it before. I learned so much. We dived into being aware of our own childhood trauma and triggers. You know I'm all about that. The difference between gentle parenting and conscious parenting, and the need for healthy boundaries, as well as sibling relationships and appropriate disciplinary responses. My head was blown. Like I said, I learned so much in this episode. This episode has so much incredible value for all parents, kids of all ages. You can get all of these nuggets of wisdom that Dr. Rose shares on her Instagram account at Dr. Jenny Rose. But first, listen to today's episode. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the Honest Hour podcast. I am Christina Mazurek, your host, and I believe that to be honest is to try to convince someone of your discovered truth of something. Your honesty is your work, your story, your relationships, and your worldview. The Honest Hour podcast is a collective voice of global influences. It is through honest conversations out loud that we can rise together through a more diverse understanding of the world. This is your honesty. Enjoy today's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to this podcast. Before we get started on today's episode, I wanted to share something with you. If you enjoy my parenting-focused podcast, you will love Meg Faree's new podcast, Sense by Meg Faree. Meg is an OT and parenting expert and a baby guru who I have turned to many times on my parenting journey. So when I heard that she had her own podcast, I was all ears. Meg's podcasts vary between giving advice to real moms about their parenting journeys to the occasional guest expert, such as my personal favorite, which is the episode with pediatric dietitian Kath McGaw on weaning your baby. So if you are looking for real-world practical advice, do head on over to Sense by Meg Faree. Thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode. Good morning, Dr. Jenny Rose. How are you today?
Hi, Christina. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm so excited to chat with you this morning. And since we've started to chat a little bit more on Instagram and get to know each other, we kept saying we want to have a coffee. I actually made myself a cup of coffee.
Well,
so this can be our very first coffee together. And since we live in Cape Town, we can have one in person soon too. I'm excited
Absolutely.
For that.
I look forward to it too.
Awesome. Jenny, for our listeners today, can I call you Jenny?
Or Absolutely.
Do you prefer Dr. Rose?
No, please, Jenny, for sure.
Okay, great. Can you give us a brief introduction?
For sure. So I'm Jenny Rose, and I'm a clinical psychologist and a parent-child specialist. I lecture full-time at a local university. I have a private practice here in Cape Town as well. And I really am just on a mission to empower parents in their own ability to parent their kids in a way that creates kids to feel secure, confident, resilient, to just really build the strength that they have, this sort of innate capacity. And I really feel that parents need to be empowered to know the strength that they have and know the potential that they have as parents. And I want to be the guiding sort of force that helps that to happen. So although I'm the so-called expert, I really say to parents all the time that they are the true experts of their children. And I want to help them to develop the insight into knowing that and really feeling that in themselves.
Amazing. You speak a lot on your Instagram account about the phrase conscious parenting. And I know that you speak about that a lot in the courses you offer as well. And we'll give more information on that later. Can you break down a little bit what is conscious parenting? And then we are just going to kind of go from there.
I'm
so excited to dive into this. Yes.
Amazing. So yeah, for me, conscious parenting has got a couple of different layers and sort of levels of complexity. So the first way I see it is that it's kind of like there are two layers to it. The first is a sort of behavioral, almost symptomatic layer. And that is to say, you know, in conscious parenting, we want to be deliberate, intentional, and conscious with the way we parent our children. Now, that is often on a behavioral level, on the sort of first layer level, in all the things we do, in the way we respond and approach whining, in how we manage tantrums, in how we help resolve and intervene for sibling conflicts and sibling difficulties, in all the things.
Is it like being mindful of our response? Regardless of what emotions are going on inside, we can control how we respond to our children in a parenting moment.
Absolutely. So that is definitely where this sort of level comes in. What it also entails is that in those moments of the behavior, we are being conscious about the way we manage the behavior. And that's why I call it the symptom level, because it's kind of like if you had a runny nose and you had flu, you kind of go to the pharmacy and you get a couple of things. You might get a nose spray and you might get some effervescent tablet, or you treat the symptom. We want to, from parenting, to treat the symptom from a conscious way. And that means we are intentional about how we put boundaries in place, how we validate emotional experiences, how we dissolve or dissipate the situation. So that's intervening right. at a very sort of symptom level. But then there's the second layer of conscious parenting that has so much depth and substance to it. And that is the layer that is around really thinking about what is it that we are aiming to achieve in our sort of parenting as a whole, in its totality. What is the philosophy that we want in our home? What is the mood or the tone that is present on a daily basis in our homes? And so we have these two layers that are always intertwined. They are bouncing off of each other, but they are very different. The one is about how we respond in the moment, those sort of quick responses to homework struggles and, you know, feeling like you're struggling, and social relationships, and how we get involved with our kids in their everyday world of parenting. And this next layer is around, you know, what are we instilling in our kids? What are the things we value? What are the principles that are important? How are we modeling these in our own homes with kids? And this is where, you know, the term conscious parenting is so simple but so profound, because it really speaks to this idea of I am making a deliberate, conscious, intentional decision about the way I'm parenting. I'm not just winging this. Yes. I'm not just coming sort of flying off the cuff here. I'm thinking deliberately about the way I engage with my kids and what I'm prioritizing. And at the core of conscious parenting is, you know, really simplistically, the idea of the relationship is the key, is the core, is the foundation, it's everything. We use the relationship that we have with our kids as a sort of building block to really build everything off of. And that's the key aspect, is constantly focusing on the relationship. What often then happens is that this all triggers our own upbringing. So again, it's, you know, really intertwined and complex. There's so much going on, because it really gets us thinking about the way we were parented and how that continues to play out in our own roles and interactions with our kids in everyday parenting.
Absolutely. I mean, anyone who's listening now is going to be sick of me saying this by this point if they've listened to my other podcast, but you just sort of helped me walk right into it, is that I always say that parenting is such an amazing opportunity to reparent ourselves. Because like you said, we get triggered in parenting. We recognize emotions that come up in us. And we also recognize that when we are in a very difficult parenting moment, we can easily see that we've forgotten we are the adult in the room.
Yeah.
We suddenly become the child in the room. And it's that wholehearted, holistic view of recognizing, wait a minute, I'm still traumatized from my childhood. My experience right now with my child is triggering that trauma. And this is an opportunity to consciously recognize that and to choose how to rise above it so that we can end the trauma cycle, become a better example for our kids than the one that we had. And I think our children, regardless of how conscious we choose to parent, they're going to have those same moments.
Absolutely.
Or they're going to have moments like that, maybe not the exact same way. And that's life.
Yeah.
But when you were talking now, it made so much sense to me. And I was able to recognize moments where I've conssciously had to apply those same schools of thought into my parenting. But for the listeners today, could you give an example, without naming any names of patients, of someone that you helped on their journey to apply more conscious parenting? Where were they going wrong, and what tools and tricks did you give them to help improve the situation?
Yeah, for sure. And I think while you were talking, it sort of got my mind going, you know, with regards to how many things happen around the reparenting role. And that process that happens. And, you know, that process is happening for every single one of us. We are just more, some of us are more attuned to that and more insightful to be able to recognize that, and others are not. But we are naive to think that our own upbringing isn't playing out in our own parenting of our own kids. And it's just, we kind of are on a continuum or a scale of how much we are aware of this and how much we reflect on this. And so, you know, I would hope to say that there are many, many, many parents that I've been able to help shift to a more sort of conscious perspective. And I think, you know, there's very sort of behavioral, practical things that you can do. And I'm sure we're going to get into that as we go on in the podcast. And there's a lot more of the sort of philosophical stuff that we sort of started speaking about in the beginning. There's two things for me that hold true when it comes to sort of this idea of reparenting. The one is that we are very easily triggered in parenthood, and we need to really reflect and think about those times and those moments when we are triggered. And I always say to parents, when we can recognize that we've had a strong overreaction to a scenario, that should be your little ding ding sort of telltale sign that you are responding to something from your own upbringing rather than responding to something in the moment here. And so we've all had them. I've had them many times where I can recognize that the way I responded to that was far greater, a far bigger reaction than the situation actually warranted. And that's a moment where you can step back and kind of say, okay, what actually happened there? Why did it get to me so much? Because it was not really a big deal, you know, for my kids, whatever was happening for them, you know, maybe they were bickering about some toy, but it really got a big reaction from me. And it was an overreaction to the scenario. And that overreaction should be your first sign to say, okay, let me think a little bit more deeply about this. How can I delve a little bit deeper into understanding why did that feel like such a big thing for me? And that's the work that you can only do yourself internally. But that could be, you know, perhaps your parents were really strict about being compliant with siblings and had really strong reactions to that. And you were expected to rather sort of hide your feelings and your conflict than actually being able to feel it and feel safe enough to explore a little bit of that and to, feel safe enough to bicker or safe enough to actually let those true feelings come out. And so that might be something that has happened for you in your own upbringing to think about. And the second thing is,
I think as you're saying that there, I just want to add for maybe the listeners who don't relate to this aspect of being triggered by your own childhood trauma coming up. I thought of something else when you were speaking as well. When we think about conscious parenting and wondering why we have a certain reaction to our child's behavior or emotion, what I've recognized in my own parenting is it's not always some deep-rooted childhood trauma. Sometimes it comes down to the fact that I haven't handled their response, their emotional response or their behaviors well because I don't have capacity to parent properly in that moment because I'm distracted by my phone. Mm-hmm. I've put too much stress on my plate. I had a disagreement with someone earlier that day, and I take my own problems into the room. And as someone who's trying to practice conscious parenting, I've recognized different tools and tips, and I want you to help go into them later as well, to help me go into the parenting moment with a clean slate, an open heart, an open mind. I always say to myself, okay, you're putting on your au pair cap. you know, because we wear so many hats in the day as moms. But for when I pick my kids up from school, I tell myself, you've closed the podcast door, you've closed the Airbnb door, you've closed the admin door. Mm-hmm. Now you are going to a job, and your responsibility right now is to be available for these children and to try to consciously understand their needs and to manage your response to those needs by putting your own adult or childhood feelings aside.
Oh, 100%.
Is that an example?
Absolutely. Okay. So we talk about, on the one hand, sort of this reparenting, which is about things that have happened to us while we were growing up. And absolutely, those are not necessarily traumatic incidents. That's just the, when we talk about the philosophy or the tone of the home, what home were we raised in? Were we raised in one where emotional expression was frowned upon and actually responded to in a more punitive way? Because then you might be triggered when your kids are emotional because you feel like that is wrong. And so it's just, it doesn't mean that there's been trauma or, you know, anything really severe in your upbringing. It's just around developing insight and awareness into the way we were parented and how that plays out in everyday parenting with your kids. And then absolutely, I think this is probably the most enormous thing that's in the way of our parenting at the moment, is that we are carrying and holding an enormous amount. I really believe that as parents in really the last couple of decades, we have never held as much as we are holding at present. We are holding a lot of various sort of aspects that a lot of parents haven't had to consider before us. So for example, pandemic parenting is obviously the primary one. The struggles of COVID and what that carries with it, you know, obviously it creates a lot of polarity. There's a lot of division amongst people. We have very set ideas and beliefs. It has often caused conflict within families. It's also caused loss 100%. And grief. There's a lot of loss that is being experienced on multiple layers. The level of loss and grief that we are dealing with as a society is enormous. And then we're in an age where, you know, just like this podcast, we are really given an abundance of information and a wealth of information that can borderline be very overwhelming and overloading. And so what has happened is we turn to external things to reinforce what we should be doing as parents. And we've almost lost that intuitive sort of instinctive ability to understand and to recognize what we know inherently as parents to do. We're now seeking sort of validation and seeking guidance and expertise all from the outside and second guess ourselves. And that's really where I feel so strongly. I really want parents to know that you have the capacity. You are the one that has the innate ability to be the best parent for your child. And it might take some tweaking and guiding and encouraging here and rethinking and shuffling and doing a couple of things, but don't feel like you need to be looking to outside in order to be a parent all the time. Look inside rather and build the capacity that is already there.
I think the key word in everything you were saying now that stood out to me was awareness, and just awareness of self and recognizing your own reactions and then questioning, why am I feeling this way? Why am I having this reaction? And choosing the response. And it also reminded me of something, and then this again goes back to my point of parenting is such an opportunity to reparent yourself, is I really struggled with my second child in the toddler years. He has a very strong-willed personality. He's very stubborn like his father. And it makes it really hard when your goal as a mother is compliancy. So I've had to really work on my goals and objectives in parenting and recognize like their own journey and experiences as well. I did a course, or rather a webinar in the middle of lockdown with Meg Faree, and she's an occupational therapist in South Africa, but she's overseas now. And she was on my podcast in 2020 as well. It was an amazing chat. She talks a lot about obviously sleeping and sensory, but this conversation with her was about positive boundaries for toddlers. And the biggest takeaway I had from that conversation with her was the ABCs of parenting when it comes to your toddler's behaviors, right? But this, I think, based on what you're saying now, it can also be applied to managing ourselves for sure. In our parenting approach. It's so A is acknowledge, mm-hmm. acknowledge the emotion, because I think we all forget that.
Yeah.
For ourselves and for others, you know, we live in this age of positive psychology bordering on the toxic positivity. Mm-hmm. And we don't allow ourselves room or space to feel how we are just feeling. And you can't really go anywhere from there if you don't allow that. So sure. acknowledge the emotion. I see you're feeling frustrated. Then the B is set the boundary. We don't hit. That's not allowed. You're feeling frustrated, but we don't hit. These are your choices. So C is for choices. So acknowledge, boundary, and choices. And I applied that with my son, but the weirdest thing happened. As someone who had childhood trauma and grew up as a perfectionist and a people pleaser and someone who chose all the wrong coping mechanisms, I was able to recognize that this is not only the right way to parent my children, it's also the right way to manage myself. And further, that philosophy transferred to my adult relationships where I was struggling to say no to things. I was just saying yes to everything. I wasn't leaving any space for acknowledging my own emotions. And it was truly making me mentally unwell and physically sick in many ways. And so it was this incredibly freeing experience just to become aware of emotions and choices, essentially.
Absolutely. You know, I think it speaks to such a bigger thing around this idea of gentle and respectful parenting. And we're going to get into what that looks like, because people often assume that that equates to permissive parenting, that that is a very soft yes. approach, and that it doesn't have the boundaries and the consequences, which is an assumption people make that is wrong, because conscious parenting is in fact very much embedded in a boundaried and structured and very firm approach, but it has this gentle, respectful aspect as well. And I often am struck by how, you know, conscious parenting, we talk about it in the world of parenting, but it really should be a philosophy that we apply to life. It should be how we treat everybody. And I think, you know, for me, it just so often comes down to this idea of, you know, when we have this picture, I have this image in my head of a parent that's really scolds or shouts at their kids. And of course, we all, you know, have our days where we are more reactive, and it's about losing the guilt that comes with it as well, because that's the beauty of conscious parenting, is there's room for us to make mistake and there's room for us 100%. To repair. So we can chat about that as well. But this image that I have of a parent really shouting, towering down over their kids and sort of scolding them, I just, apart from knowing all the science behind it and why that's not helpful, you know, it just leaves me wondering, imagine as an adult, if someone came to you and spoke to you like that when you had made a mistake or when you had done something wrong, that they would actually come and meet you with this massive scolding, this overpowering voice, this overbearing, loud reaction, and what that would do to you, how belittling that would feel, how sort of dismissive that would be, and how hurtful that would be, I think. So it's really important that we just think about, okay, these things that we are doing in parenting, these are basic things that we should be thinking about in how we engage with others in relationships. And that should be sort of the key aspect from which we build.
Absolutely. I love how you spoke about the fact that there is a difference and a fine line between gentle parenting and conscious parenting. Can you dive a little bit more into that? It made me think of, I don't know if you follow her on Instagram, Aisha O'Reilly.
Yes.
She is a wonderful, yes, she was on my podcast last year or 2020 as well. We had a wonderful chat. She always says she can talk for days. I'm like, me too. So it was a good combination. But she recently went on to her Instagram stories and did these really funny, honest, real talk videos on how she's frustrated with the gentle parenting movement and philosophy, because it gives you all this advice and opinion about why you shouldn't have a strict parenting approach or set boundaries, and you have to have this gentle parenting approach. But she said it doesn't help you figure out the next step when the gentle parenting approach doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I could really relate to what she was saying, and you've described so eloquently already that there is a difference, that boundaries and structure are healthy for our children, and we need them to understand the boundaries and the structure they're expected to live within at home and at school and society. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Where do we go wrong with gentle parenting?
Well, I don't think it's so much that we necessarily go wrong with gentle parenting, but I think we make the mistake of assuming that this sort of new way of parenting, whether we want to call it respectful parenting or gentle parenting or conscious parenting, we make the mistake of thinking that it is purely about emotional validation for our kids and really raising our kids in a very sort of gentle environment that is only nurturing. Now, what is actually true, and this is where parents often sort of struggle in this understanding of conscious parenting, is that there are two layers for me. There's sort of two legs from which conscious parenting is built. The one is, yes, absolutely, first, emotional validation, emotional processing, emotional regulation. That is our goal. That is our first point of connection with our kids. We want to connect with them emotionally. We want to validate their experiences. We want them to know that whether they're happy, angry, sad, jealous, embarrassed, ashamed, whatever it is they're feeling, that is acceptable. But what parents often fail to do when they are new to this approach is they forget that there's a second step. And so they do all the work making sure that they are emotionally present, they are validating their kids' emotions, but they leave it there. And that actually, as a standalone, is what we call permissive parenting. And that is permissive parenting, if you look into the styles of parenting that we know the research sort of validates, permissive parenting is that parenting we can all reflect on. And we know we had one of our friends grew up like this. I'm sure we can all relate to this and know someone that grew up like this, where there just are no rules. There are no boundaries. Those are the kids that could stay out till whatever time they wanted to, the kids that could eat whatever they wanted to, the kids that could do whatever they wanted. That is permissive parenting. And so without step two, the first element of conscious parenting really just is permissive parenting. So we have to ensure that we are ensuring that step two, the boundaries are there. The structure and the boundaries are step two of conscious parenting. And it's that holistic picture of the emotional validation in combination with structure and boundaries. And that is what allows us a space that is respectful, but contained, nurturing, but with boundaries of what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And that is where there's room for kids to flourish. Because kids really need predictability, they need consistency, they need following through, they need structure, they need to have a sense of containment of what their life looks like. When it is open-ended, when we allow this free-for-all approach, that is so debilitating for kids, actually, even though it feels like the fun option or, you know, the easy option or something great. That is so difficult for kids because it's like a sea in front of them of uncertainty and not knowing and unpredictability. We as parents want to make their world as safe as possible. And safety in kids is achieved through creating predictable, consistent, routine, structured engagements time and again. That is where kids feel safe, feel confident. And that is where they build the capacity to venture out a little bit, to challenge themselves, to push the boundaries of what their bodies can do. That is where they explore, because they know where the cap is. They know where that ceiling is. And so they can feel safe to explore to that point and sometimes even a little bit beyond. But when there is no boundary or no sort of lid or container on the top of that, it's a free-for-all explosion, which often for many kids results in such ambiguity that they can feel anxious a lot of the time, that they have huge behavioral outbursts. These are kids that you see that are constantly falling apart, having meltdowns, because they don't know the boundaries of what their world is and how they can exist in this world.
That makes so much sense, the way you've described it. I want to jump into a third pillar here, if I'm not going completely off track, and you can pull me right back on if you want to, is the topic of discipline. Just when it comes to, I mean, I know you spoke about the gentle parenting approach and how it's permissive parenting, and then we have the conscious parenting approach, which we call positive boundaries with Meg Verrie, and you have the acknowledge the boundary and then the choices, so they can thrive within safe zones because they know what their boundaries are. Now, let's say there's misbehavior. And you've acknowledged the emotion, you've given the boundary, you've given the choices, and you're still met with major resistance from your child, especially, you know, toddlers. Now, when it comes to discipline, the next step, like you understood your boundaries, you understood the boundaries, you understood your choices, and you still hit your friend. You still threw your whole plate of food on the floor. That's not acceptable. This is where I get very confused because of all of the information out there for parents is we're told not to raise our voice. It's damaging. Not to isolate the child. It's damaging. And obviously not to physically punish the child with corporal punishment or hitting.
Yes.
So I try to consciously be aware of the situation, seeing that it's going to come to this point where I'm going to have to come up with a disciplinary measure. You know, I've learned to see the signs. Okay, we're heading in this direction where I'm going to have to discipline my child, and I don't want to be impulsive and do or say something I will regret or not follow through with, because I know that's even worse. If you do that, I will take away your toy. I will cancel your play date. I will cancel your birthday. And then obviously they learn that none of these things are ever actualized. And I've seen that with. And it's not helpful or productive either. So what's healthy?
I mean, I think this is one of those ones we could probably chat about for absolute ages. But I think the first point that you touched on is so important, that we want to really be sure about what it is we are saying when we say these things in the moment. Because one of the biggest assets that we have as parents, and something that we should use as a resource, is our own word. And that is, when we are consistent and when we follow through with what we are saying, our kids develop the ability to know that what we say holds true. And that should ring true across all contexts. And we often think that, you know, we tell our kids things like, you're safe. If I'm with you, you know that you're safe. If I say that this is a place to go, that you'll be okay. You can trust my word and you can trust that. What we often forget, though, is that kids don't know how to differentiate between these really big, profound, deep moments and the very silly, small ones in the playroom where they're having a squabble and you are threatening about a toy. And so we want them to know in every moment that what we say holds truth, that whether I say I will take this away or this will happen, this outcome will happen, it will happen. And that is why it's so important to first think about the consequence that you are putting forward to your kid. I often say to parents, it's more important for you to think about it than the impact it's going to have on your child, because you need to be okay with whatever it is you've said. And, you know, one of my favorite examples is how parents often use this idea of, okay, well, if you're not ready or if you're not going to behave, we're going to go without you. And obviously that's also problematic for a variety of reasons in terms of trust and, you know, just on a developmental, psychological level is not helpful. But at the other side of that is also the child knows that you will never leave them home alone. That's just not an option. And so you lose credibility of your word. And what we want to ensure with discipline is that our word holds true, that we have credibility in what we are saying. And so that is already, again, this idea of conscious parenting. I'm going to be thoughtful about what it is I am using as a discipline strategy, because I want it to work. And I want them to know that if I've said X is going to happen, X will happen. Whether that's as a consequence for discipline or whether it's as a way to contain your anxieties about safety, and whether it's about my commitment to you and being available for you, I want you to know that in all these scenarios, my word is my word and it holds true. So that's the first element of discipline that we want to hold onto and we want to keep in mind. The second is that we also have to challenge ourselves around and reframe this idea of what it is we're looking for in behavior with our kids. Now, for most of us, the goal is to have, you know, compliant kids. We want our kids to just be well behaved. But we also need to think about the idea of, are we expecting perfection in our kids? So, of course, we all want compliance. We all want our kids to behave well. But are we setting a realistic expectation of what is appropriate for a 2, 3, or 4-year-old to actually be able to do? And when we adjust or alter our own expectations, sometimes that in itself gives us a little bit of objectivity to the situation, and actually prevents us from really reacting rather than responding to the moment, because that's what we want to ensure that we're doing, that we respond rather than react. And if it feels like our kids are falling apart all the time, we want to be saying, well, what is the alternative? What are we expecting? Are we expecting a smooth day with absolutely no struggles? And is that realistic? So how can we just reshift our expectations around our kids' behavior? So as you can see, yes, a lot of this approach is really about thinking about your own role in your child's development, because these first two areas that we've spoken about are related to the parents. And now only we kind of move to the child. So it's no longer just this idea of how do I fix my child's behavior? How do I sort out something in the moment? It's about saying, how do I use this relationship for the most optimal outcome, for a healthy way of interacting? And how can I get my kids' behavior to be the best that it possibly can be? So then we want to ensure, in terms of our discipline, we want to make sure that we are setting consequences when the need arises. We want to work through this plan of absolutely validate the emotion, put the boundary in place, but then hold true to that boundary. When there is still oppositionality or pushing against that boundary, that there's a third sort of component, which is the follow-up or the consequence of that. And one thing that I love to do with my kids, and I tell parents to use this all the time with good success, is to say, it's such a simple phrase and it's really helpful, is to say to your kids, your behavior is showing me dot, dot, dot. Because what this yes. does is when we say, let's say, for example, we're at the park and it's, you know, your child's struggling and you decide that it's time to leave the park because they're just not cooperating and that, you know, you're not enjoying yourself and neither are they. You have the opportunity.
The wheels are falling off.
The wheels are falling off. Exactly. Yeah. You have this opportunity to say to them.
This happens a lot.
Exactly. A very common example that we can all relate to. In this moment, yes. you can say, your behavior is showing me that our playtime at the park is finished and that you aren't able to be here in a way that is good for both of us. So we're going to go home. So that does two things.
Normally I say to them, your behavior is showing me you're hungry or tired. And my oldest son gets really cross. I am not.
So you
So maybe, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say that.
Exactly. You're starting it so well, but then what is happening is you're providing a logical reason for why they're behaving like they yeah. are. And in a moment of dysregulation, remember that kids are unable to access logic. They cannot go there. So for
they're
them,
only emotional.
It just, yes. exactly. It just actually elicits and triggers them even more. And so when we say to them,
so just speak to the emotion.
Yes.
Okay.
And your behavior is showing me something. Okay. It's helpful for two reasons. The first is that it means they have responsibility and accountability in how the situation is unfolding. So that's different to me saying, I've decided we're leaving the park. This is different because it's your behavior that has resulted in us leaving the park. And so they are able to then link their behavior with a consequence, because otherwise they don't pair those two together. They just think mommy suddenly says it's time to go home and maybe mommy is cross for some reason, but I'm unable to link that is connected to my behavior. And so we want to ensure okay. that as discipline is a teaching method, that they take something from it that they can apply to another situation, we want them to see in that moment that their behavior is linked to an outcome or a consequence. And the second thing yes. about what this thing, this little phrase does, is that it gives them a moment of opportunity to shift their behavior. Because you're saying you yes. are in control of the situation. It's your behavior that determines whether or not we stay or go. And if it's you that's determining that, you have the opportunity to shift. Whereas if I have decided that it's time to leave the park, that decision has been made. There's no shifting from that. And so it's an amazing way of kids actually being able to shift and to sort of redirect and come back after that initial struggle. And so it's really a simple, simple strategy that is quite powerful and quite effective.
And it's so nuanced, because language is so important here from what I'm understanding in our conversation. And it makes the difference between helping your child recognize their ability to be empowered and independent and to earn resilience versus developing this terrible inner critic that damages their self worth. Absolutely. Like, it's the difference between showing what's acceptable and not acceptable and what the natural consequence is versus you were bad, I'm holding my love from
exactly,
you.
Exactly, exactly, which is what we absolutely want to avoid. You know, that is the narrative that we do not want to feed our kids. One of the, if you ask me what is the biggest thing that I want parents to know and for parents to give their kids, I would say it's this concept. It is, our kids must know that our love is unconditional. Our love, our commitment to them is not based on how they behave. It is not a conditional thing. It is not, if you do X, I will love you. It's not like that. It's unconditional. At the core of our relationship should be, no matter what, I love you. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, no matter what happens, I love you. Of course, we want to put measures in place so that our kids are, you know, really well-behaved, well-liked, kind, strong, brave, resilient, secure kids. Obviously, we want to build those capacities, but we also want them to know that at their darkest and their most vulnerable and their when they are struggling and when they aren't doing these things that we would usually want to see, we still love them. Mm-hmm. We still love them. And that's what we really want to hold
attachment.
To. Exactly, exactly. And that's, to me, the difference between punishment and discipline. Because in discipline, there's this overarching sort of respectful, nurturing way of putting boundaries and consequences in place. And, you know, don't mistake me. I still say that those things need to be put in place, but they are not done in a punitive way that evokes shame. Shame is one of the most complex and difficult emotions for kids to hold on to, and even for adults. Think about, you know, probably the most difficult emotion. For many adults, they would say it's shame. And we want to make sure our discipline doesn't encompass or envelop shame in any way for our kids. And we want discipline to be something that they take and learn from and can apply to the next moment. Because what often happens when we use punitive methods is we might see compliance in the moment. We'll see that our kids suddenly respond and are, you know, so-called behaving well. They stop doing the thing that we didn't want them to do. But suddenly, 10 minutes later, an hour later, the next day, the next week, they do these same behaviors over and over again. And that's because in a punitive space, they are unable to learn. And so our discipline strategies should be such that they can learn from this moment, that they can link the behavior with a consequence, so that they know when tomorrow comes, if I behave in this way, that same consequence will happen again, because mom is consistent and mom is true to her word. So I know that that is what is to come. And that is how we see behavior ultimately evolve.
More internally and intrinsically.
Exactly.
No, I understand what you're saying. Now, we need to be aware of where we are allowing permissive parenting and punitive parenting. And it sounds like while they're on the opposite ends of the spectrum, neither is really healthy. They're almost radical in a way. And we want to be in the middle. Just recognize the boundaries, create a healthy, safe environment. But they also need to be aware of what the consequence might be for their choices. For your behavior is showing me this. We have to remove ourselves from the situation. So the parenting struggle I deal with so much, I'm going to be selfish here and ask a personal question. Is
go for it.
When it comes to my two boys are 22 months apart and I'm pregnant with my third boy.
So
it's going to be a big age gap. But I'm going to – thank you. I'm very excited. But I will have my hands full with these boys.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm quite grateful for the age gap because what I've noticed with having two children so close together – contrary to what people might think who don't have children so close together, it's not this amazing, easy setup where you have like best friends for life and they just play independently off frolicking into the hills together while you just have a glass of gin and tonic with your husband on the porch.
Yeah.
No, it's a lot of power struggle and refereeing, and the sibling relationship is something I'm becoming so aware of having to manage. It's not something I want to control because I know what the damaging effects of that could be. But where I find myself trying to identify the correct disciplinary measure is recognizing that I want my children to have a healthy sibling bond. They are as different as night and day, but it's important in our family that there is respect and appreciation. They don't have to be best friends, but they do need to get along and not be disrespectful towards each other. So in terms of like that behavior and identifying the right discipline, I often find myself seeing them start to interact and play and have, you know, this verbal and nonverbal communication together, and it seems like it's going well. And then there's a conflict and they don't navigate the conflict in a healthy manner, and it ends up turning quite disruptive, to put it lightly. It depends on the day. And what I've thought a lot about this and tried to be consciously aware of what the greatest response should be. And their favorite things these days is having a play date, having a friend over, or going to a friend's house. So what I've started to do to manage their sibling relationship is I say, if you cannot play nicely together, it shows me you're not spending enough time together learning how to be respectful. So we will have to take away that play date this week. So you have a choice now to figure out how to handle this conflict appropriately, or we cannot have that play date tomorrow. So you can try again. So I don't know if that's the right disciplinary response, but I would love to talk more about sibling relationships.
For sure.
So, in a nutshell.
I think that that's a fairly okay response. My initial concern with it is that it's quite a way away for kids to then connect that. And so often when the consequences delayed, there is time that is created in between the behavior and the consequence. And for kids then, even though you have articulated it and verbalized it, it's difficult for them to pair those two together. And so even when tomorrow comes and I don't have a play date, I'm not able to recognize that it was because of my behavior and my inability to problem solve in that moment. And then I'm going to shift that again next time. So that's where the only sort of thing I would say is that delay in the consequence makes it quite tricky. But what I think is maybe more important and where you should look to come in is that what often happens, a very typical scenario, is that exactly as you've described, our kids are playing together and it's all going great to begin with, and we're almost close to being able to sip on that gin and tonic, as you've said, and observe them. And suddenly the meltdown or the explosion comes and there's a bit of a disaster. Now, what typically happens is that we sort of rush in and we come in and we resolve the situation. And even if we don't bring about exact resolution, it's us guiding what needs to happen, or we say, who had it first? What is going on here? Okay, I'm taking this toy. This is what's going to happen. You go to that room. I'm going to go and play in this room. We get involved and we sort of facilitate and mediate the whole encounter, or maybe even more than that, we kind of take charge of the scenario. But what happens is that we do not give our kids the opportunity to learn what to do in that moment. And this is the mistake we're making. We're assuming that kids know what to do in that moment. We're assuming that they know what conflict resolution is and they know how to resolve things in that moment. They don't. But what happens is we don't teach them how to resolve it. We come and resolve it for them. And so that's why they're never able to do it, because we sort it out for them. We fix it. We say, okay, you take this one, or you play with your toy in the room and you come here. We sort it out for them. And so then tomorrow comes and the same thing happens and they get into this heated moment, but they don't have the skills developed in terms of how to negotiate and how to resolve together. And so rather our role needs to be one of more like a sort of backstage facilitator, or almost slightly in the background mediating what is going on. And so we want to help our kids to sort it out. And one of the most amazing ways of doing this, again, such a simple thing, but really is helpful, is to say something like, okay, so there's a green car that you both want. There's two of you. And only one car. What are we going to do about this? And you let them come up with ideas or ways to resolve it. And in the beginning, it might be that they both say, well, I'll have it. I'll take it. That's how we resolve it. But then we want to explore and say, okay, but what would your brother say? How would your brother feel if you suddenly take it? Okay, what is maybe another way that we could both figure out something that we're both okay with, that we're both happy with? And you want to just come at these situations time and again with the intention to act as the co-facilitator, the person that's encouraging this to happen, rather than sorting it out for them. And we call this thing that we do, we call this sports casting, where we sit on the sidelines and we actually commentate as if you were watching sport. I always say, you know, for most people in South Africa, we are a really big sport nation. I'm sure a lot of you can relate to what it sounds like when someone is commentating on sport. And that's what you want to do. You want to say something like, okay, so Jack's got the red toy and John was tugging at it and pulling for the toy and you both fell over and ended up crying. And now everyone's really upset and you kind of narrate what you see. And when you do that, firstly, it creates a bit of distance in the heat of the moment. So it actually is an opportunity for kids to regulate slightly. It slowly brings everyone down. So you're not in the path of, you know, things one, just kind of like dominoes falling. You've actually created a little bit of a slight kind of breathing space where they can also start to process. And then that means they're operating from a more contained logical space rather than from one that is completely dysregulated. And that's where you teach the skill. That's the small little window or opportunity to teach the skill of problem solving and conflict resolution. And that's what you want to give to them, knowing that it's not going to work every time. I want to say bicker with my spouse or argue with my spouse that is perfect everywhere, every time that we have perfect conflict resolution. There are times where I'm frustrated or he might be frustrated and we don't resolve it maybe in the most optimal, amicable way. But we do most of the time. And that's the same kind of goal we want to set for our kids, is that for the most part, they're figuring it out. They're getting it right. But we also want to give them a bit of grace that it's not perfection that we're looking for, that there are going to be days where they just don't get it right. And that's also okay.
And like you said, managing our expectations. Just when I was hearing you talk about that as well, I was like, I think sometimes I expect the conflict resolution to happen too quickly. And that's where I have to practice patience. I was obviously patience. I was the last in line collecting the patience fluid when I signed up to become a mom. And sometimes I'm like, okay, like, yes, there is a process and you're recognizing the path and the map now to do this thing the right way. But it's not going to happen in 30 seconds. It might actually, sometimes I look at my clock and I'm like, okay, you're putting out a tantrum now. You're putting out a conflict. You need to look back at your clock when it's done. It won't be more than 15 minutes. Absolutely. It won't be more than 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
It's often not even more than 5 minutes. But I find myself getting to the boiling point so fast because they didn't process what I was saying quickly enough. And I see that as being, you know, stubborn or in compliance. And so it's like you said, conscious parenting,
exactly.
Recognizing the situation for what it is, helping talk them through their own emotions and choices. And I definitely recognize after hearing what you said now that my original response to sibling rivalry was punitive. And it's going to be ineffective. The punishment's too strict. It's not appropriate and it's too far in advance. Yeah. I mean, this is hard work.
It's hard work.
We need a coach. We need a parenting coach.
No, and let me tell you, I say this to people all the time. Come look in my home. There's not a child psychologist and a parent-child specialist. It's just me as a mom that makes the same mistakes that you do. Even with the parent coach, even with the knowledge, with whatever it is, someone standing there, we still make the mistakes, and that's okay. I think there is so much beauty and growth that comes from making mistakes with our kids, for the opportunity for reparation, the opportunity to model apologies, to show them how we all struggle. We don't want them to think that things are perfect, that we never struggle, that life is easy, that we get it right first time all the time. We actually want to encourage our kids to know that sometimes we struggle with things. Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes we make mistakes. And that's the, you know, a great way of modeling that to them so that when they make mistakes, when they feel like they're failing at something, they've got a frame of reference. They can say, I'm not alone in this. And I'm not, you know, kids often go to this space of I'm stupid or I'm, you know, something's wrong with me because I'm not getting it right. And actually, if they see that in your own home, what an amazing lesson that they see that it's something that's completely normal and okay.
Yes, absolutely. But while I don't think we can all get a parenting coach as much as I would love that, what we do have available to us is the wonderful course that you offer, the parent training course. and the workshops that you speak at. So there's two things coming up. I just want to give you the opportunity to talk about that a bit now and refer the audience to those great options for them. And the first one is the Toddler Play Conference, yes. I think it is next week. I'm already signed up. I'm going to be watching all the videos. I'm so excited. So tell us about that and then tell us about your parent training course that's coming up.
Amazing. So the Toddler Conference next week is something so wonderful and I'm so excited about it. And I feel very privileged to be part of it because there are such incredible presenters and it is such a phenomenal resource for parents. And that's what I want parents to take away is that this is an opportunity to really build your capacity. It's a resource that is available for you for free to delve into the world of toddlerhood. And there are just so many different topics that are being covered that whatever it is you're struggling with your toddler, there's likely to be something there for you. I'm talking about sibling relationships. That's the talk that I've done. There is something about picky eating, there's screen time, there's raising kids bilingual, there are ways to simplify your home and your toy rotation. There is just an array of topics available that are so, so helpful and just provide incredible nuggets of wisdom and practical advice on how you can apply this in your own home. So I'm really excited about this. It's a free conference that's available. You can watch at your pace and at your time over next week. And so I think it's a very helpful tool for parents. And then the second course, or the second part is the course that I've developed. And I've spent a really, really long time, probably close to a year developing this course because I have really felt that there's such a need for parents to be guided to develop this internal capacity for themselves. And it's really filled with a combination of so many things. It's the knowledge, the research, the experience that I've had. It's practical advice, but it's also building you up to recognize and know your own triggers and to also know the strengths that you have. And so there's so many different elements of this course that I think will speak to you in so many ways. I think probably similar to this podcast, we've spoken about, you know, the sort of general philosophy, the general ideas of conscious parenting. We've looked at practical examples. We've looked at how it impacts us as parents. We've thought about the way we were parented. So there's so many different components to it. The main course that I'm launching is a 6-week course, which entails videos that I've shot and developed. It's got family footage, sort of showing you different ways of me doing things with my kids and practical examples. It's got a lot of written content for you to go through, some handouts and some example exercises and things to reflect on. And for 6 weeks, there are different topics that we look at. It begins with secure attachment. It moves into conscious parenting. It covers nonverbal communication. It covers language, which we touched on today, how powerful these nuances of language are. And ultimately, it starts looking at emotional processing, emotional regulation, how we actually build towards self-regulation. That should be one of our goals in parenthood. Mm. And then there's even a component on tantrums and what we should be doing in those moments. And then finally, wrapping it up with lots of practical advice and input on how we pull all these things together, these different layers of parenthood and what that looks like in our everyday parenting journey.
So I always joke that when I was a kid and I was frustrated with my parents, they would say, this didn't come with a handbook. It didn't come with a course. And now I can say to all the parents listening now, there is information available. It's Jenny's course.
Exactly.
And hopefully. I'm so excited. I'll be doing that now just to give the audience a little bit of the nitty gritty. How often are they listening to webinars each week in that 6-week course? Where do they sign up? When does the next one start? What's the cost?
So what's amazing is that it's all at your own time and pace. So this is what's really great. There's a learning online learning platform that's being built into my website that you then register, purchase the course, and you can listen to it at your own pace. Ideally, it's
okay. So you get login details.
You get your login details. Ideally, it would be where you move and do one topic a week, just because that will help you to consolidate the information, apply the theory of what you've learned in that week. But you can move at the pace that you would like to. The videos can be watched from your phone. It's really user-friendly. I know for parents, you're often listening on your phone while you're lying next to a cot at night, or perhaps 5 seconds of free time outside the school while you wait to pick up your kids. It's designed with short videos that you can just grab a moment, listen to it, have a read through the handout, reflect. It's really accessible. I've really built it in mind of you as a parent and how you can take this information and make it work without feeling like you're having to put down and put aside an hour and work towards this sort of big learning concept. So you can have a look. They'll be released soon. They're coming very soon, hopefully in about 2 weeks' time. The first six-week course should be on there on my website, which is drjennyrose.com. And then there
I'll drop all these links
in
the show notes.
Amazing. And then there are another four courses that are coming in about a month, which cover toddler sleep. There's a very big course on toddler sleep, and it's got seven subcategories on how we can deal with sleep, how we can encourage kids to fall asleep independently, why sleep is such a big thing, you know, understanding separation anxiety. There's a section on nightmares. Yes. A lot of comprehensive stuff there. And then, as I say, a couple of other courses coming your way. So the goal is to keep adding course after course and just building this platform for
Amazing.
Parents to take in knowledge. So keep an eye on the website, and hopefully you'll see within each month another course is loaded that you do at your pace and your time.
Incredible. I will put all of these links as well as your details for social media and following you into our show notes. Dr. Jenny Rose, thank you so much for your time today. I really valued this, and I know our audience will too.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it too. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you for listening to the Honest Hour podcast. I hope this recording inspired you to live in your honest truth. And I encourage you, if you enjoyed the episode, to subscribe and to rate the podcast. If you would like to connect with me online, I would love to hear from you. I'm on Instagram at The Honest Hour Podcast, and my website is christinamazarek.co.za. Thank you and have a beautiful day.